welcome to the Coalition for Physician Wellbeing's podcast, The Wellbeing Connector, where through our guests, we explore ideas for making healthcare a better place to work and serve. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Today, I'm excited to have the opportunity to bring you a special show. Our primary guest will be anonymous, and another guest will introduce herself later in the broadcast. So, let's get started. So thank you so much for joining me today and agreeing to talk about your experience and your story. Could you just start by just reviewing what happened and take us through the story?
Sure. I'm an obstetrician. I took over call on a Friday morning. And as I arrived to the hospital, I was I had a patient who had a fetal bradycardia. As we went back to the operating room, we proceeded with an emergency delivery, and mom and baby were both fine. The baby did have low Apgar scores. However, with resuscitation, the baby perked right up. As we were finishing the C-section, the mom somewhat steamed unstable, and at the conclusion, basically proceeded to undergo cardiac arrest. With a multi-team effort, and multiple resuscitative measures, after I would say about over an hour or so, we were unable to revive her. And she was pronounced as dead. It was horrible. Even though we tried, multiple anesthesiologists were there, trauma surgeon, a variety of other physicians, it was determined that that she had an amniotic fluid embolus, and ultimately it was massive, which was later confirmed with her autopsy. However, you know, with the event of losing a patient, it was very devastating for me as a physician. And, I felt like I had failed her and, her baby and her husband. And also I had failed myself. So it was a very devastating time. At this point I had reached out to somebody in, I guess she's like a friend of mine. She's kind of, a leader in the OBGYN group that I'm part of. And she had recommended that I speak with a counselor, to really go over what was happening with me and how I felt and in order to help me be able to move forward in the future. Because at the time, all I could do was really cry, and I just kept going over the situation in my head over and over again, about whether I could have changed something, done something differently, despite what everyone told me that, you know, there was nothing else that could be done. So that's when I reached out to Susan, and that's when we began speaking on the phone.
Susan, did you want to introduce yourself to the audience?
Sure. So I am Dr. Susan Wilson. I actually am an emergency medicine physician, and I retired from clinical practice back in June of 2019. And I subsequently became a certified physician peer coach and have since been very passionate about this whole concept of second victim syndrome and providing peer support. And so we were connected through an EAP that I am currently a consultant for. And so started having these peer support conversations specifically designed to help get through this kind of phenomenon.
So give me some of the nuts and bolts. How soon after the event did you guys talk? How often did you talk? How long were the talks? How did it work?
So I believe that we connected, I think it was pretty shortly after the event, within 24 to 48 hours, I think we actually had our first conversation.
Yes.
And then one of the things that's really important in general about these kinds of conversations and support is that very close follow-up really is, it's a crucial part of the process. And so I know we met, we talked again, I think a couple days later. And then after that, it was maybe 3 or 4 days later. So we kind of chose, they were sort of, I almost landmark, you know, sentinel periods during the next 10 days or so, you know, like I think the next time we talked was after a couple of days had gone by. And then the next time was after your first shift back in the hospital. And so we kind of tried to strategically, you know, map out times when it would be really beneficial to talk through things, both to see, you know, how she's doing emotionally and to see if there were, you know, new perspectives that we could talk about that might help get through this period. And I believe our conversations were normally, they were like 30 to 45 minutes in length, as I recall.
Okay. So how did it make you feel to have someone to talk to? How did it change things?
Is that for me?
Well, I can call your name. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry. initially, I remember the first time, I think it was Sunday, this happened on a Friday, that I talked to Susan. I pretty much cried the entire conversation, because I just, talking about it, I was just so upset. But then when I talked to her like a couple days later, she had given me some things to try and work on. And she suggested that I, like, you know, be positive about the things that I'm doing for my patients, the current patients I have. So I think every time I spoke with her, I cried a little bit less. And, you know, I was able to, you know, maybe talk a little bit more about how I was feeling and how it was, you know, doing another C-section, the next time. And, you know, she talked, it was, you know, nerve-wracking to do something that had caused so much tragedy. And then I had to do it a week later. So by talking with her after the event, it kind of gave me confidence to move forward and to, you know, continue to see my patients and not feel like I was going to harm them.
Was that the biggest fear?
I think so. I think I felt like I did something that could have harmed this person. And in my mind, I knew it, that wasn't the case, but I guess I couldn't overcome the thought that somebody, as I was caring for them, I couldn't save them no matter what I did. So, yeah.
Was this the first time you've had such an event in your career or been around such an event in your career?
Yes. I mean, I did have another patient die, but I was there for. I think it wasn't my own. I wasn't like personally caring for her. So yes, this was probably the most tragic event I've ever had in my life. And I think it was very tragic for all the people that were involved. And, it was just, you know, something that wasn't supposed to happen. Young people aren't supposed to, you're supposed to be able, I felt like I was supposed to be able to save everyone, and mothers and babies are supposed to go home from the hospital together.
So it changed how you saw yourself?
It really shook my confidence as a physician, and it made me worry that I was going to hurt somebody else. But, you know, fortunately, by talking with Susan, I was able to realize that that's not the case, and that I'm
I'm a good physician and I love what I do and I'm compassionate with my patients. So I think it helped me to move forward. And, you know, I can never forget what happened. But I'm at least able to like move forward and I guess compartmentalize this event into like some I don't know if you want to call it an experience, but just, something that has touched my life. I guess that's more of how it is, I think.
So, Susan, what was your approach to helping through this transition?
Well, I think the first thing that's so important with these conversations is really just allowing the clinician just to have this safe space where they can say whatever they want. I mean, you know, our role in providing peer support is really just to be, you know, an emotional sounding board. And so, you know, the whole concept of just being non-judgmental, providing a safe space, confidentiality, you know, just allowing the person just to vent and to talk about it was really stressful for them. I mean, that was like the main, you know, focus of our, certainly of our initial conversation. And then the whole concept of maybe being able to take a step back from the event itself and maybe gain some new perspective and some new insight into the event and maybe looking at things in a little bit different way. So I really think the idea of having, you know, an objective person to talk to kind of bounce these ideas off of is really important because, you know, then I really think it's therapeutic. I mean, I know I personally have had these sorts of, adverse events in my own career. And I know how that feels when you just are able to talk with somebody and you're able to kind of review something and then maybe gain new insight. So that's kind of how the conversations went. It's really, you know, it's really all about the clinician and you're just supporting them. And, you know, it's not the coach's agenda. It's what is important for the person that they're talking to.
How much of the conversation gets into medical detail? And I mean that as a peer coach, how important is it to have a physician as a peer?
Well, so really, it's interesting that you ask that because in terms of the training that coaches are given, in terms of having these kinds of conversations, you specifically are trained that you're not there to ask details about the case. You know, that's not your role. Your role is to provide the emotional support. But I've found both in providing the peer support and also myself as someone that's experienced these situations is I find it is very therapeutic for the person to recount the story. So although we do not, you know, we as a coach would not specifically ask, oh, well, tell me exactly what happened. Oftentimes, you know, it comes out in the conversation. And I think that is, I think, a therapeutic thing for a lot of people to be able to just discuss it one more time with someone that you know, is intimately aware of medicine and can totally understand what they're talking about. So, you know, I think being a peer supporter really adds a lot to the conversation.
I think it's very helpful from, you know, with Susan being able to relate to exactly what was going on and, you know, her medical background. I do feel like it was very helpful as opposed to talking to just a regular counselor who had no medical background. It really helped to further, because you kind of want to talk about it in detail because it's so fresh on your mind and you just can't, you just have to go over it in your mind. And I think what Susan said helped by the fact that she understood what I was talking about, as opposed to, say, talking to a friend, a layperson or something.
So she understood both the language and the situations, is what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay. And were there other concerns like malpractice or anything else that you discussed as well?
I guess I was a little worried about the malpractice, but that wasn't my focus at the time. I mean, I think the emotional trauma of it was almost like, how did this happen to me type of thing? Like, why did I have to be on call that day? You know, why, when I took over call at that second, did this have to happen, as opposed to like 4 hours before, or like, why wasn't she in labor the day before, as opposed to the day I came on call? So I think those were the more of the scenarios that I was discussing, just because I guess I was grieving so much at the loss of this patient.
And how were your colleagues where you were working? I mean, you described the story where you were working with a bunch of colleagues when this happened. You weren't alone.
The hospital did supply counseling and coaching for anybody who was involved in the care of the patient, because, you know, a maternal death is very uncommon, especially at the hospital where I work out of. So a lot of people were really affected by it. The residents that were there, the residents especially who helped me with the surgery, and the delivery of the baby, and, you know, the nurse who was the nurse, you know, laboring the patient, and, you know, the anesthesiologists that were involved. So they provide emotional support for everybody and counseling. But I had already been talking with Susan, so I actually didn't take advantage of it.
And I guess for either of you, I'm not asking what could have been done differently from the medical point of view, but from the point of view of the second victim syndrome, is there anything that organizations can do that would help people who are involved in situations respond to it better or be better prepared for it?
Well, interestingly, there are definitely organizations out there that have put together very, you know, robust, detailed peer support programs. And I think it's a question at this point of just getting the word out and disseminating this information to so many healthcare organizations, because so many people in medicine that I talk to have never even heard this term before, second victim syndrome. So the organization I'm thinking of in particular that I've actually gotten a lot of my own personal information from is at the University of Missouri. It's called the 4U team. And they actually, at the University of Missouri Medical Center, they have set up a peer support program. And it's a little bit different than what I personally am offering, because these are volunteer people that work in the hospital that have had very abbreviated training in these kind of conversations, but they've had training nevertheless. And so they are available to provide this support. So, you know, the idea of somebody that's not only a coach, but is also a peer, they're the ideal one really to be able to provide these kind of conversations. So I think at this point in time, and especially now with the pandemic and with all the stress and anxiety that this is causing, getting the word out about the importance of peer support, you know, systemically is, I think that's the big challenge.
And what kind of training does a physician need to be capable of being a peer support person?
Well, as I said, I mean, some of these programs that have been set up in hospitals, they recruit basically volunteers. And these people have, you know, like maybe it's a 6-hour course or a 1-day lecture on techniques of conversations and things like that. Physician coaches have, you know, that are certified coaches have much more extensive kind of training. I mean, they take, you know, courses that last several months. And so they delve into the technique of the conversations and the skill set that's really required in a lot more detail.
Excellent. So So how are things going now? How long has it been since this event?
This was in September.
September. So how are things going now?
I'm good. I mean, I feel a lot better. You know, I guess, you know, it's kind of like in my, you know, I'm not focusing on it. I occasionally think about it and I'm a little sad, but it's really just kind of, I've able to move on and I'm not thinking about it, you know, when I'm doing, say, a C-section anymore. You know, I'm able to, you know, do my daily activities and, you know, I guess I went through the grief aspect and, you know, even the insurance company wanted to do a peer review and they came back to me and told me that they value me as a physician and they, you know, realized that nothing I could have done differently would have changed the outcome. So that kind of made me feel better, I guess. I think I'm doing better and I think I'm, you know, coping and moving forward. And I, you know, I don't think I look at my patients and think, oh my God, that's going to happen to her anymore because I'm able to move past the event.
So if you had a colleague who went through a similar event, do you have any words of wisdom that you would give now that having gone through this experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think talking with somebody immediately, you know, right after the event was the best thing I could have done. You know, me talking to my friends and my husband, I mean, they're very supportive, but they just can't understand, I suppose, what it's like. And I think because Susan has that experience of taking care of patients and knows what like patient loss is, that she's able to like really be empathetic and really be supportive, and pose questions to me that made me think, oh, okay, well, it's not always my fault or it's not something that I did that caused this. And I would tell them to, you know, talk with somebody as soon as possible. Because I think if you don't, then it just kind of, you know, then it could make you uncertain when you're taking care of another patient. And then you may be afraid to, you know, do what you normally do in private practice. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Susan, do you have any closing thoughts or words of wisdom you want to share as we come close to the end?
Yeah, well, I just think, you know, just echoing what she has said, I think it's so important that clinicians, whether it's physicians, nurses, mid-level providers, pharmacists, you know, anyone on a healthcare team that has suffered through an event like this, it's so important for them to reach out and get some kind of emotional support because it just makes a huge difference. And, you know, I think, unfortunately, we traditionally in medicine have all been trained that to be stoic and, you know, the fact that we're invincible and we can do everything ourselves. We don't need any outside help. And I'm hopeful that that attitude is changing and that people are starting to realize that, you know, it's okay to ask for help and we need to ask for help and this kind of support. And so I'm hoping that, you know, I'm hopeful that moving forward, this whole concept of peer support will really take hold. You know, there's so many issues. I mean, not just second victim syndrome, but now with the pandemic, you know, there's so much moral injury that people are experiencing. I'm sure the rates of burnout in medicine are going to increase because of the work environment, that's been exacerbated by the pandemic. So, you know, all of these different scenarios are all kind of coming together as a perfect storm and just kind of showing us that, you know, we need to really embrace our healthcare professionals and get them the support they need. And wellness is more important now, you know, it's more important now than more than ever. So I'm hopeful that we will, keep on fighting the good fight and get people this kind of help.
Well, I want to thank you for the wonderful work you've done and this example of how peer support can be so helpful. I also want to thank both of you for willing to talk about this situation, because I think there's a certain posturing in healthcare in which people don't want to admit their mistakes, and mistakes will happen. And it's getting stories out of people who've been through them, have struggled through them, and come out of the side, I think is so helpful for people to hear, because there will be mistakes in the future, and we need to all be supportive of the patients who go through it, as well as the providers who are also, as we said, the second victim.
Absolutely. Well, and one other thing I just wanted to mention, Michael, I actually have written a blog post, and I have a tab on my website specifically that talks about second victim syndrome. So I think if any of your listeners would be interested in, you know, learning a little bit more of the, you know, the didactics of, you know, the definition and where it came from and the treatment, they can certainly go to my website, which is sjwprofessionalcoaching.com. And then maybe glean a little bit more, about the concept.
Well, great. Well, thank you both for being on the podcast today, and I wish you both the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, that's our show for today. I want to thank Dr. Susan Wilson and our anonymous guest for joining us today and for sharing both their insights and personal stories. If you wish to learn more about Susan or contact her, you can find her information on her website, www.sjwprofessionalcoaching.com. That's www.sjwprofessionalcoaching.com. If you wish to learn more about the Coalition, please visit our website at www.forphysicianwellbeing.org. You can also check us out on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook. I also want to thank our volunteers and the staff from the Coalition who made this podcast possible. Finally, I'd like to thank Acesis, A-C-E-S-I-S, Incorporated, for sponsoring my time working on this podcast. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and his guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Coalition for Physician Wellbeing, its board, or other members of the Coalition. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Brown, wishing our caregivers out there meaning, purpose, and joy in the practice of medicine. Together we are stronger. Until next time.